Scanning. Identity authorized. Welcome to the Secret Superhero Club Podcast Network.
Hear you leave today and enter the world of Hilt Radio. We'll take you on an epic journey through the magic of all things Disney, Marvel, and Star Wars, from the movies to the parks and everything in between. It's time to take you to Disney and beyond with your hosts, Brittany and Liam DeCosimo.
And Mommy too.
Welcome back. It's been a little while. Guess we shouldn't have left you guys alone because I think that you might have forgotten about us. But who could forget? Your favorite host over here at Hilt Radio is Hear You Leave Today and enter a world of yesterday, tomorrow, and fantasy as we take you through all the latest and greatest from the House of Mouse, the House of Ideas, and a galaxy far, far away. And to take you on this adventure is, of course, myself, your host, Liam.
I'm Brittany.
Oh my gosh. Bimo, welcome back to you as well.
I've apparently been MIA for almost a month.
I was about to say, Remy, welcome back to you too.
He's waving.
Nice.
He's waving from the other side of the room.
So, Bimo, give us the rundown. What's happening in the wonderful world of Disney?
All right. Well, we're going to kick it off. It's going to be a little bit sad, but we got to remember Cameron Boyce. We're going to move it along to Halle Bailey announced as Ariel in live action, the Little Mermaid adaptation. Our first look at the live action Mulan, along with new trailers for Maleficent 2 and The Lion King. And, of course, Galaxy's Edge Rise of the Resistance opening dates pushbacked at both parks.
Nice. So to give you guys the Marvel rundown, I guess, Endgame, obviously we saw a re-release just a little while ago, but it's going to bring it within a breath of beating Avatar at the box office. Spider-Man Far From Home is on track to be the first film starring our favorite web-slinger to eclipse that $1 billion mark at the box office. And then Marvel is expected to reveal the Phase 4 slate at this year's Comic-Con.
All right. And for Star Wars news, Diego Luna reveals that he was disappointed with the ending of Rogue One.
And Daisy Ridley has let slip that we might see even more intense lightsaber battles in Episode 9.
And Jon Favreau talks about The Mandalorian and the future of the series on Jimmy Kimmel.
Fantastic. So we'll have all of this and more on this episode of Hilt Radio. But as always, we got to talk about ourselves. Let's get into our adventures, if you don't mind there, C3T1.
Prepare for adventures in fandom.
All right. So first, we do want to apologize for the last 3 weeks, the longer than usual delay that we've had just between, you know, family events, birthday parties, our own oncoming birthday party, I guess you could say as well, for the newborn baby. It's just been, honestly, it's been hectic. It's been erratic. We've tried to squeeze in what we could in terms of being able to go see Spider-Man Far From Home. Mm-hmm. So we got a chance to see that. We were trying to fit in like a review that weekend. That didn't happen. We were like, oh, we'll see it again and then do a review right after we see it again. That didn't happen as well. Wanted to try to see Avengers Endgame again in the theaters. That didn't happen as well. So no. It's weird because it's been a hectic 3 weeks, but I can't recall like all the stuff that we did.
It just feels like it's been busy. You've been busy with work.
And they changed up my schedule, like not permanently, but like because of vacation coverage and then because of holidays, they've had to have me work additional days. And it's just been, it's been tiresome. We've been exhausted.
Yeah, been exhausted. I'm growing a human. It's definitely exhausting this time around, much harder than the first time around.
Right.
So we're in the third trimester now. So things are getting a little bit more real and getting bigger every day, and the due date is around the corner. So I think we're like 10, 11 weeks away from her arrival.
Just nuts. It doesn't seem like it's been that long
already. No, it's going by super fast. We keep trying to plan our last vacations that we'll take before she gets here because there's going to be a couple months where we're just going to be homebodies, which I mean, we're homebodies anyway, but where we have to be homebodies. So we're trying to figure out a Disney trip in the works coming up, other little just beach trips to fill out the summer, saving for baby showers and decorating her room, just all the little things that come with a new baby. So there's a lot. It feels like we should have all of the time in the world to be able to just hop on and do an episode, but we don't because that extra free time that we do have, we honestly just want to sit on the couch and just enjoy each other's company and relax because, I don't know, it's felt very exhausting lately, so we're very sorry, like we said, for not being able to hop on every week. But we did let you guys know once we found out that we were having another kid that it probably was going to slow down for a little bit. But we're not ready to give it up just yet. So, hey, if it's going to be once a month or once every 2 weeks, we're doing this just as much as, you know, as much as we can.
Yeah, as long as we can squeeze it into the schedule. With that being said, I think the biggest fandom related event that we've done obviously was going to see Spider-Man Far From Home. So we did get to go and see it opening night, which was odd because it was a Tuesday this time as opposed to the typical, you know, Thursday at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. But this time they had like earlier showings as well on Tuesday where we ended up going, I want to say it was like
technically the official day of it opening.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the day before where they previews. Only go, preview night or premiere night, they want to call it. This was the official day it was open. So I think you can go in as early as like 10 or 11 o'clock when the theater was opening and they had some showings that early. So you just worked. So we couldn't go that early.
Yeah. No, we picked a slot that we thought gave me enough time to get home, get changed, get us out to the theater so we could get the popcorn, get the, you know, the premier bucket and the matching drink cup and everything. So obviously it was, you know, Brittany, me, and then also Remy. So the three of us got to go. I'm always kind of like interested to see how much of the movie he actually pays attention to.
Right.
And with this one, he actually stayed pretty tuned in. There were obviously the longer dialogue parts where he starts to like get restless in his seat and move around a bit more. But for the most part, he stayed pretty tuned in. I think it's because Spider-Man is pretty much his favorite.
Oh,
Remy, is Spider-Man your favorite? Yeah, he's nodding yes. So, I mean, like that's his superhero. And I think it really, since like the MCU when we've been taking him to movies, I'd say once Homecoming came out, that was the one that like really did it for him. I'd say the ones he got the most invested in would be Spider-Man and then probably Black Panther, I think, was the other one where he was pretty interested in buying like the toys and the gear and everything. So I'm surprised that, you know, those were the two, and because he was Iron Man for Halloween, he was Groot for Halloween, but I think those were the ones that he has a Thor costume that he almost never wore.
Right.
So.
But now I think his favorites still tend to be Spider-Man. And I don't know. I think Iron Man is still pretty up, like,
high
up there.
Yeah. Hulk, Captain America, I think, like, the main ones. But the other, I think the one that stands out the most, like, he plays with the Lego figures.
It's Spider-Man speaks Spider-Man. To kids.
Yeah.
He just always has. So I don't know if it's all the shows, all the extra. I really don't know what it is. The acrobat.
Well, him like, being younger, like when you see everybody else, it's like, oh, they're grown-ups. You know, there's going to be a little bit of a disconnect. But with Spider-Man, I feel like he's always resonated more with a younger
People
generation.
People like to relate. And kids show it too. They like to relate.
So without getting into heavy spoilers, I mean, I know it's been out for, you know, 2 weeks at this point. But without getting into real heavy spoilers, how did this one stack up for you?
I hated it.
But you are a Sam Raimi purist.
Still,
like, you're all about the organic web shooters.
I don't know why Disney thinks that they can go on and make new Spider-Man movies. They just need to stop.
Or just
leave
bring
it to the
back
cartoons.
Tobey Maguire in his
obviously
40s.
I want to see Tobey Maguire in a Spidey suit again. No, I actually really don't want to see that. I mean, maybe if they did like alternate like dimensions with all of them, that'd be kind of fun.
Which is totally possible.
Like well,
oh, no,
did,
no, we can't spoil anything, but which is totally possible with some of the cameos
Anywho,
and cliffhangers.
No.
So.
As Spider-Man is my tops.
Yeah.
Out of all of the Marvel characters, I think Spider-Man always has stayed like pretty much a favorite of mine since forever. And that's probably because of the Sam Raimi Spider-Man. I do enjoy those movies. I know some people don't. Apparently people now love them way more than they ever did. They're going to pretend and lie that they love them so much. Yeah, you were the people that were talking crap on them before any new iteration of Spider-Man came out.
Or you were just so young that you were like, oh yeah, I like the movie. But now they hold it up as though it's the holy grail of Spider-Man films. And I just don't
They're great movies,
sure.
Like, they were amazing Spider-Man movies. I enjoyed them. Yes, they had their faults, but every superhero movie does.
See, I was one of the guys I follow on Twitter, he had compared it to government cheese. So he said when he was a young kid, that because they didn't have a whole lot of money, that they relied on a lot of government assistance programs.
Yeah, so you get this huge block of this, government cheese.
Yeah, giant block. You know, exactly. Yeah. So the giant block of government cheese. And he goes, at the time, you loved it because that was the cheese that you got. You didn't get any other cheese. There wasn't any other options. That was it.
Now it's childhood. Now that's nostalgia.
Yeah. So, but he says, but when he goes back, like now that he's had all the really good cheeses, he doesn't want to go back and eat government cheese because it was great at the time and for what it was. But looking back on it, he can appreciate it for sure. Uh-huh. But that doesn't mean he wants to eat government cheese. And that's the way he equated it to the Sam Raimi, the Andrew Garfield.
Right.
What was that one? Mark Webb, the Andrew Garfield movies. And then obviously now with John Watts and Tom Holland.
Right.
I got to say, that's honestly, it's an odd analogy, but it's great because I'm the same way. I loved the Spider-Man movies. I always thought it was super awkward that Tobey Maguire looked like a dude in his like mid to late 20s playing a teenager.
I think I was too young to realize that.
But you look at him, I didn't really like the way, I like Kirsten Dunst, but I didn't like the way that MJ was portrayed because she was very self-centered. Like
very.
The whole, how come you didn't come to my play? Like as though he has money to go and afford a Broadway play or to do these things. So it was,
have you seen his apartment?
Right? Dude doesn't even have a door that works. Like there were certain aspects of the way that he was portrayed with the organic webs, right? And like, was it in two? Where it stopped working because he was sad. Like, it just, there were things that were just very weird that they decided to do with all those movies.
I don't know. Things like that to me make sense. It's like, it should be your body. It's coming out of him, you know? It should be something that your body produces. So when you're going through the emotions, it's hard. It's difficult. I mean, I can relate completely right now. Like, my body isn't producing what it needs to.
So you're saying Spider-Man was pregnant?
Totally. Heck yeah. He's got, maybe he's just hormonal.
But that's the thing that throws me, though, is the biggest complaint that people have with Homecoming and Far From Home, like this iterate, the MCU's version of Spider-Man, is that he relies too much on Stark Tech.
Yeah.
And
that's what the big complaint is.
Yeah. And that, like, they almost fail to recognize that he still created his own web fluid.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's their complaint. But they love the Raimi films, but then ignore the fact that he didn't even make his web fluid in those movies. It was organic. And that was just a choice that Sam Raimi made. And I love Sam Raimi, but that was just a choice that he made cinematically. And I can accept that there are always going to be different iterations of the character. Mm-hmm. Ultimate Spider-Man, Spectacular Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man.
They're all different.
It's always going to be different iterations. So for me, and I loved Into the Spider-Verse when it came out, December of last year.
Last year, yeah.
I thought that was a beautifully done film. And I can accept that there are different versions of the Spider-Man. That's literally the point of that movie, is there's so many differences. So it's bizarre to me that people take such a issue with this version of Spider-Man, when even Stan Lee himself said that Tom Holland is Spider-Man. He's like, when he was cast, when I saw him in Civil War, this is Spider-Man. Like, if you have the Stan Lee seal of approval, you're good to go.
Exactly.
So I'm not saying that people on the internet can't have their opinions, because God knows they do.
That's what the internet is for.
But remember that it's an opinion. It's not fact. Exactly. Your opinion that you prefer the Raimi Spider-Man or the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man to Tom Holland, that is fine that that's your opinion.
I think it's the arguments that it, you know, causes is what is frustrating.
People get so upset.
People get very angry about it. And it's the whole, let me start a hashtag and a movement of not my this, not my
and
that.
And we'll get into that and with the Disney stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And let me start a website about this. Let me, you know, like
a campaign.
All these things. It's put your, I feel like we say this on every episode, or at least I do. Put your time and effort into something that actually needs to be changed, fixed, saved for the better, for mankind.
Like, there are more important things.
This is what makes so many of us look bad. It goes back to even the Star Wars fandom, when all of the Last Jedi stuff came about, where that group of fans made all of us look bad. It's like, oh, you like Star Wars? And now everybody's looking at us like we're probably those idiots online that are starting arguments with each other. It's like, actually, no, there's some of us who just don't care. We enjoy things or we don't enjoy things. Like, but we're not going to go and, I don't know, lose sleep over it. But these people do. And I get it that it is some people's lives. But I think if it is your life, you really need to step back and rethink it.
Yeah. Well, when you think, well, To be fair, a lot, just like we do this podcast for fun, a lot of people do podcasts and videos exclusively
because it's their livelihood. It's their form of income. I get that.
So I think sometimes they have to be contentious for the sake of the clicks and the viewers and, you know.
And I think that is different. That is one reason where you're going to hear right here where this podcast, where we are still in the same place that we've been for years, because we will not be those people.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I will never be that person who feels like it needs to take over my life.
Right.
Because this is for fun. And I, as much as it would be awesome if this was the only form of income, but when you're being angry just for ratings and, you know, an argument and to get people to click on your stuff, you're obnoxious.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care if you're getting paid and you got sponsors. You look like an idiot.
Right.
You my know, opinion.
Yeah, right. And yet again, not a fact, just our opinion.
Just my,
So in not just in the MCU, but like in Spider-Man films, where would you rank Far From Home? Would it be towards the top, the middle, or the bottom?
Oh,
like,
this is my favorite.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Is easily my number one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's no question at all. I think there's like a huge gap between like this, the movies and the rest of the movies.
So why would this film, like, what was it about this one that elevated it so much?
I think they went from the first one, from Homecoming, which I loved. I adored Homecoming, which I think that one is my favorite before. Right. And now it's not just a, because it's Disney's now, or it's our MCU. It's like, yeah, but Sony's still working on this. They obviously have done a great deal on this film, more, I imagine, than the MCU has. But I loved Homecoming so much. This one, I feel like, elevated Homecoming.
Sure.
Way, like, probably double. And Mysterio was amazing. I feel like his iteration, Jake Gyllenhaal's, I guess, iteration of Mysterio, was perfectly done to fit in with the MCU.
Right.
And then also to just be great for a Spider-Man villain. This is exactly how it makes sense today.
Yeah.
Because that was always my worry of knowing, like, the things that he could do. It's like, how is that going to come across on screen? In a cartoon, sure, I get it. But in a live-action film, the things that Mysterio does, like, they've come across Thanos, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They've seen aliens. He's been to space now, you know? Sam Jackson says it himself. Nick Fury says it. I don't know if we can say that word.
Right. No, I don't think
we won't say that word. Show. You've been to space, which it's true. They've seen so many things that it's like, how is the normal Mysterio actor or stuntman, you know, special effects creator gonna pull something off cool enough, you know, to make superheroes like Spider-Man and Nick Fury and everybody else believe him?
Right.
They did it perfectly in this movie.
Well, and one of the things I think that this movie did probably better than a lot of other movies so far within the MCU is tried to pull a little bit more away from the comics.
Yeah.
That they were like, I think Civil War did it the best so far, where they were like, look, this is an iconic storyline with iconic characters. We're going to take elements from the book because there are certain beats for certain characters that obviously we want to see because it's the familiarity.
Yes.
But ultimately, we're going to make our own movie. If you go read the even just the 7 issues, the main storyline of Civil War, and you watch the movie, they are fairly different.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
the whole Black Panther chasing down Winter Soldier aspect of it, it pulls it drastically different. With Far From Home, I think the decisions that they decided to go with when it came to Mysterio, the decisions they went with Nick Fury even.
Yeah.
And then ultimately with Spider-Man, like his machinations, the idea that, yes, he's sad about Ben Parker, his uncle being murdered, obviously that always was like the core of who Spider-Man is as a character in the comic books.
Right.
But I like that this version is not really driven by that.
Is not doting on it.
Yeah, that is not the one defining element for why he is Spider-Man. And I get it. I know there's people out there that they feel like that's too much of a deterrent, that that is a staple, a must-have. Mm. It'd be like having Captain America without the super soldier serum. I get it. For some people, that's what it is. For me, I actually really like that his driving force is now Tony Stark, that it's not just him as a mentor. It's not just him as a legend, as an icon, but it's him as the father figure. It's him as the being held up to this pedestal that Peter feels like he has to aspire to, that he is being looked at as the next Iron Man, or that Tony was grooming him to be the next Iron Man, and trying to come to grips with that responsibility, as opposed to the "with great power comes great responsibility" line that we get from Ben Parker. I'm not saying that's not important, but the responsibility aspect for Peter is still there, but it's a different force behind it. And I actually really like that, because Tony Stark has been so instrumental in the development of this MCU, and so many people are... they circle around him. He is the sun. He's the bright center of this universe.
Right.
I.e. Thanos knowing who Tony Stark was.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't call Steve Rogers Steve Rogers or Thor. He didn't call anybody else really by name. Mm-hmm. He even called Star-Lord the boyfriend. Right. He didn't really call him by his name. Like, he knew Iron Man. He knew Tony Stark because he's so important to what this universe is. So I'm fine. I'm not just fine with it. I was excited that was something that they leaned into. And having, so this is a little bit spoiler, but having some of Mysterio's reasoning for doing what he does be tied in. And we could tell even with the costume, it was very reminiscent of like Thor and Iron Man. It had that aesthetic to it. So I dug it. The way that the fishbowl collapses in, it's very much the nanotech type stuff that we've seen in Black Panther.
It's still so cool because it's such a corny costume, but it's looked so good.
It really looked impressive. Jake Gyllenhaal killed it. Yes. I mean, I thought Michael Keaton as the Vulture was going to be one of my favorite villains, but like Mysterio, Quentin He's Beck great. Was phenomenal. What else? I mean, what else?
MJ.
Is there?
I MJ think she's finally, you know, coming into her own. Because I think in the first one, you just get like the kind of snarky, like sassy, quiet emo MJ, and so people were annoyed with that. Some, you know, people again,
but I think
were frustrated about this iteration of MJ.
But they keep thinking that this is Mary Jane. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's Michelle Johnson or whatever. I can't remember what her last name is supposed to be, but. It's Michelle.
It's a new
version
of MJ.
Yeah.
I highly doubt we're going to get a Mary Jane, you know.
But even if we do, this is the MCU's version of Mary.
This is the direction they wanted to go. Yeah. And I like that. They're changing it up. It's not the same. So many people complained that we were getting more Spider-Man to begin with. Like, but we had this version, and now we had this Andrew Garfield version, and now we're doing this again. It's like, but they gave you something different.
It's new.
It's completely new and refreshing. And now people are angry that they're doing something different with it. It's like, but you were angry that they were doing it over again. Yeah. It's like it is
you
new.
Can't, well, you can't win.
No, I mean, you can't.
That's ultimately what it comes
really
down
can't.
To.
Really can't. But
so what did you, now with the with these John Watts movies, he's really talked about them being more John Hughes influence because it is supposed to be high school.
Right.
Did you feel that this balanced the high school aspect enough with the superhero aspect?
Perfectly. I love this. I think that's a big reason why I love this movie so much too, is because I don't think this is a spoiler. They kind of give it away in the trailers, is that Peter Parker wants to be a freaking teenager.
Yeah.
He wants a vacation from being a superhero. That was the point of the vacation and being far from home and, you know, trying to leave his Spidey suit behind. I love that. He's still a kid and he wants to be a kid. He wants to fall in love with a girl. These are like emotions that these teenagers are going through. They showed everything from, you know, relationships starting. I won't say who, if that's a spoiler at all. This is exactly how things go in high school.
Right.
If you don't remember, then it's been way too long. I'm sorry, guys. But I think they did it so well where they touched on teens in school. That's exactly how you would act.
Yeah.
And I think they did that perfectly. I love this. I love that it's Peter Parker being a teenager and trying to balance being a superhero still, because again, with great power comes great responsibility. You can't just stop.
Well, and that responsibility extends beyond just being a superhero. It's your responsibility to your friends, to your family, to your schoolwork.
Right.
I mean, you have, and especially for a kid trying to balance all those things, like Tony Stark gets to be Iron Man and Tony Stark because everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
Peter is constantly trying to hide that identity, to hide himself, to try to find that balance between being Spider-Man and the responsibility of being Peter Parker. Like we've seen it in the trailers, we saw it in the beginning of the film, like him doing the charity work stuff for Aunt May.
Right.
Like there are a lot of aspects of this that I think people missed, and I think people were annoyed because they felt like there was too much high school. And I was like, do you guys forget that Peter Parker is how old this kid is supposed to be?
I
think that's what it is, because with the Sam Raimi and the Andrew Garfield,
they felt older.
We got them at like the tail
in
end
college,
of their senior
yeah.
year, and then they're immediately by movie two, they're
in college or on internships or
and that's I think people wanted him to move quicker, like they wanted one movie in high school and then every other movie, and I'm like, no, I want all the movies in high school because I have enough movies about people that are grown-ups and living normal human adult lives.
Right.
I want to see how a kid handles this, because as we said earlier on, that's what kids resonate with, because they can see that and go, I understand Peter Parker because he deals with the things that I deal with. I just don't have spider powers.
Exactly.
Regardless of how many spiders I let bite me.
but Remy said he won't let any spiders bite him, so
he was scared of the one under the TV.
I guess we have to deal with him not being Spider-Man.
So with this one, it's tough. Because I need to see it a second time, because the first time was like floored me amazing, was so good.
Yeah.
But I don't want it to just be, oh, it was one viewing and it was great. So right now I think Into the Spider-Verse still ranks at the top for me. But once I've seen this one again, I do feel like this one will probably catapult it above. But even that being said, my favorite appearance of Spider-Man is still Civil War.
Yeah.
Out of all the Spider-Man's, everything I've ever seen, his introduction
that
and his
great.
Utilization in Civil War is still my favorite iteration or version of Spider-Man that we've ever seen.
I don't know if Homecoming or Into the Spider-Verse is my number two.
Yeah.
That's tough.
I think you really like Tom Holland. So.
I do. I really like Tom Holland. I think he's a great Spider-Man.
But Jake Johnson as the overweight, out of shape Peter Parker.
Is so good.
Was amazing. It makes me want him in a live action.
And come on now. We all have crushes on animated characters because that doesn't ever go away. And I feel like Peter Parker isn't it Peter J. Parker?
Yeah.
Isn't that his name?
I think so, yeah.
That one, he is super handsome. So, I mean, he can give Tom Holland a run for his money. Just saying. I don't know. But this one is easily top. Because as I was watching the movie, like, it felt like what Spider-Man should feel like.
Yeah.
And so did Into the Spider-Verse. I think watching Into the Spider-Verse felt like watching a comic book. And that was amazing.
Yeah.
For the first time seeing it done the way it should have been done all along, is, you know, feeling like the comic book pages were just splashed onto the screen. That's what that movie feels like. This feels like a live action version of that to me, because I think they did so well with Mysterio and with Peter Parker's growth, like still trying to be a teen and, you know, go through the motions of that, as well as taking on that Spider-Man role and trying to fill Tony Stark's shoes, is at the same time not doing that. Like, that's emotional. I don't know. Everything hit for this movie with me. And the ending, oh my goodness, the extra credit scenes, all of those moments were amazing. I imagine everybody knows what happens by now, but that's a huge spoiler. So won't say, I can't believe they did that.
Well, to me, it's setting it up very much for what I don't think there's a spoiler, because they don't tease that in like the extra credit scenes, but I think they've got to be setting up for Sinister Six, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was said that he only had six movies on his contract and that Civil War did count. So you've got Civil War, Infinity War, Endgame, and then Homecoming and Far From Home is five. So he has one more is what they're saying. I've also heard rumors that he actually has another trilogy booked past this next Spider-Man movie, in addition to Avengers appearances as well. So
oh, wow.
I've heard he has as many as 7 more appearances.
That's
so
amazing.
One more for this trilogy plus another 6.
That's nuts.
I can totally see it.
They were smart with casting younger. Somebody who, you know, looks as young as he does. I don't see him aging super fast any day. So he is definitely going to get older and he's going to look more of an adult. So that makes sense that, you know, hopefully the Spider-Man will get out of high school eventually.
Yeah.
But I think his films will probably stay grounded in high school.
But how cool would it be to feel like you've grown up with a character?
That would be awesome.
You know, like with Tony Stark, like, yeah, from 2008 to 2019, Robert Downey Jr.
We got a decade of his life.
Yeah.
But we didn't grow up with him.
Right.
We grew up. He was already older.
Yeah, 40 to 50, yeah. Right? Whereas with this, like, we got to see him as he was, what, like 18 or 19, 17, something like that in the first movie in Civil War. So that was, what, 2016? So
you like go, the actor you're saying?
Yeah, like
Tom
as an
Holland.
Actor, like Tom Holland, the actor. Yeah. So I think he's only like 20 or 21 right now. So he's still relatively young. So it's going to be cool to see him, especially between like that 20 to 30, where you can really see somebody change as a person. So I'm excited to see how this plays out. I don't think a third Spider-Man can come soon enough for me after that. But I'm also excited to see how he will be tied into other characters that are getting introduced, which we'll talk about in the Marvel section.
I think it was the perfect follow-up to Endgame.
Yes, agreed. Yep.
To be able to explain what happened, the blip.
Yeah.
Because we all had questions about that. Like, what? These kids grew up. Like, how is this possible? Some of them grew up, some of them didn't. This explains it well.
And they play with it.
It's funny. I mean, you guys have seen the first one. It's supposed to be funny. This one is probably even funnier than the first one. The dealing with, you know, what happened with Thanos and dealing with Tony Stark being gone, all of the things having Happy in this film, I think,
which was great.
Utilized John Favreau so good. So I don't know. I think this was the perfect movie to follow Endgame.
Nice. Agreed. So if you guys have seen Spider-Man Far From Home, feel free to comment your thoughts and whatnot. Try to keep it spoiler free, but we'd love to hear what you guys thought of the movie and where it ranks in your MCU. I feel like pretty soon we're going to have to do
a
new ranking of all 23 films now.
Right. Without looking at our old ones to see.
Yeah. And we've talked about doing a Marvel ranking where we rank all the Marvel movies.
Oh, gosh.
So maybe because we're not going to get another MCU movie until next year, maybe heading into the end of this year, that's something that we actually
do. Well, there's still a lot of Marvel movies I need to watch.
That's what I'm saying. It's like we need to go back. Like you need to watch the Dolph Lundgren Punisher. You need to watch Ghost Rider and Spirit of Vengeance. What was the other one? You haven't seen all three of the Blade movies either, have you?
I have. I don't remember them.
Okay, yeah. So we'll definitely have to go back and watch the Blade movies. I mean, there's so many that we can go back and view, so I'm excited to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
I guess we have time now.
I know. We have time now. But perfect. So I guess that's it for adventures. Let's jump right into the news then.
Yes, let's do it.
Scanning. Here's what's going on around the galaxy.
All right, so we're going to kick it off with some sad news. I'm going to try my best not to cry, but I'm already going to cry thinking about it, about not crying. Okay, so Cameron Boyce, we had to talk about this. It's been about a week since he's passed. I think it was on the 6th, I want to say.
Yeah.
July 6th, passed away at age 20.
That's so crazy.
A baby. Devastating news. From what we know, it was an ongoing disease that he was battling, and he had passed from, seizures is what happened in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And they couldn't revive him when they finally got to him. So I think to keep this as positive as possible, because I hate seeing the negativity online where people have to go in and, you know, put their 2 cents in. He's an actor. He's young. He's a Disney star. They can only, you know, take it to the negative. No, if they say what it is, that's what it was. Okay,
yeah,
guys?
Yeah.
Let's just go with that, because he was crazy talented. Way too young to go, so much more to give. And I think the fact that his movie is coming out in like less than a month is so sad.
Right.
Because I keep seeing his face on screen.
Well, because you figure he's got, you know, we like Descendants 3 obviously is coming out. He was recently cast in like an HBO series or something, or like Showtime. So like he had another show that he was cast in that obviously that was going to kind of take him from
the kid,
kind of that exclusively Disney actor into some of the other realms. Cause you know, he had come in through, you know, Jesse and Bunked and, you know, random appearances.
All the Descendants.
Yeah, the Descendants films as well. So
he was on Grown Ups 1 and Grown Ups 2, the movie with Adam Sandler and Salma Hayek.
I think that was actually I only ever saw the first Grown Ups, but I feel like that was the first
time.
He was
so young.
Oh, he was super young.
Little kid. But he was so young on Jesse, too. I mean, these kids start out super young. I mean, he's only 20 years old. Goodness gracious. He was a baby on those shows. Yeah. Like when you think about all of his little freckles and oh, so precious. I feel so like devastated for his family. Like I'm trying to hold it in. It's, I don't even know this kid.
Yeah.
But because he's a kid, it's so sad to think about. And it's devastating when you hear people pass away. Like, but when they're older, it's kind of like, well, they got to live their life. They got to, you know, have a career. This kid was barely starting.
Yeah.
It's so sad. And like we said, Descendants 3 comes out August 2nd. Disney Channel is still showing all of the commercials. So I see his face throughout the day as Remy watches the channel. It's so, so heartbreaking. But what they're doing with Descendants 3, which I like this, is instead of doing the red carpet, which they were supposed to do July 22nd coming up, Disney has decided to cancel the red carpet premiere and then instead just donate money to his philanthropic organization that he was so invested in. So they're just going to send all the money that way.
That's awesome. Like,
that's amazing. But so devastating. So we won't see a red carpet premiere. Seeing all of the outpour from, you know, his friends on from the Descendants cast,
the cast breaks my
heart too, because, hey, they're basically all family. So when you see them finally getting the courage to say something about it, it's like, oh, it's trying to move on, but you can't, you know, people got to move on with their lives. But it's just so sad that that's what we do. We hear these things, then we move on. But these people still have to live with it every day. So to his family, I'm so sorry about the news. He, you know, leaves behind his sister, which he was super close with, his parents, his mom and dad, and then all of the people that, you know, he made friends with from the shows.
Yeah.
So I guess a moment of silence for Cameron Boyce.
All right. Pixie dust to you, Mr. Boyce, and to all your loved ones. So moving it into some of the more, what should have been happy news, but then, of course, I'm sorry, guys. Like, I know we kind of bash on the fact that the internet kind of sucks a little bit, and I understand that this radio show only exists on the internet. I get these things. But we actually had our announcement for Ariel for the live-action Little Mermaid.
Huge news.
Yeah, so Halle Bailey. I know I always want to say Halle Berry, but Halle Bailey, who you informed me currently is part of a duo with her older sister.
Yes.
That was signed by Beyonce or discovered by Beyonce. And then now her and her sister both appear in the TV show Grown-ish, which is an offshoot of the TV show Black-ish.
Yes. Which is an ABC show.
/ Freeform, what have you.
Yeah, now this one is a specifically Freeform show. So I like that they did that they went the teen route. They gave her her own show and they put it on Freeform, which they tend to do with all those teen shows.
I kind of assumed they were going to do the same thing with the older sister in Stuck in the Middle. Like, remember she had, like, she was gone for several episodes because she was going to, like, Paris or something?
But she went to Netflix.
Yeah, because she did On My Block.
Yeah, but then... Well, I don't want to spoil that for you guys, so we'll just leave it at that.
But just interesting that, with Black-ish, I know we'd only watched a couple episodes, but we always thought it was funny.
Yeah, like
it was a fun show.
Wickedly funny show. It's just one of those we never kept up with. We're very rare that we keep up with sitcoms.
But even shows like The Goldbergs or like The Connors,
they're
loved Roseanne.
They're good when
and
you watch them. There's so many shows now that it's hard to keep up, and you really have to love the show to want to go back. I think Superstore is probably the only show that we stayed like kind of current with.
Yeah,
we were probably maybe a couple weeks behind, and that's about it.
Yeah, but like Good Place, we kept forgetting to catch up on.
We have to wait till it to binge it on either Netflix or Hulu whenever they put it on there.
For sure.
But yeah, so she is, like you said, in a duo group, Chloe and Halle. So you can, if you want to hear her sing, because I think that is kind of the main thing here, guys.
Search her doing Unforgettable.
Yes.
It is hands down. Awesome. All the clips that you found, that was head and shoulders above the rest of them. The rest of them were great, but that was phenomenal.
That's what I would hope her Ariel would sound like.
She's
her Ariel.
But honestly, based on what we've seen, they'll probably go more pop. It'll be, you know, because they're going to try to sell a top 40.
Hopefully not auto-tuned.
No.
Like crap, but.
Well, we ended up with Emma Watson and Belle.
She doesn't need it.
Her voice is fantastic just the way that it is. I would hope that they would play into that. Are you expecting for the live action to do a lot of the same songs, or do you think they'll introduce one or two songs specifically for the film?
They're definitely going to introduce specific songs for the film because you got to remember we have Lin-Manuel Miranda working on it.
That's true.
With
Jennifer Lee or whatever her name is from Frozen.
Is that who's on?
I think so.
Oh, goodness. I don't remember. What's his name? No, Alan Menken. So Lin-Manuel and Alan Menken will be working on new music as well as the old music into a live action version. You're obviously going to be a more poppy. Well, I don't know. A lot of the Disney music is already poppy. But more today, it'll, you know, fit today with her style. She's great. So I'm completely okay with her playing Ariel. And it's like, and even if I wasn't, who gives a crap? Like, what? Yeah. Like, why does it matter if we're okay with it or not? It's just like, you're gonna give them your money and go watch it?
Yeah.
Cool, because that's all they need.
Well, even if you're not, then you're not the person they're trying to cater to anyways. Like, it's
exactly.
I love that people think, I'm going to make a hashtag and that'll make Bob Iger change his mind. Like, it's not. I guarantee you that Bob Iger, like, probably had absolutely nothing to do with her casting. Uh-huh. There was casting directors. He probably said, hey, cast whoever's going to be the best fit. Because he's not involved to that degree.
Like that.
But there's people complaining
then,
that they're like, well, this is
do you think you're going to change the directors and the producers' minds, the writers?
No.
Like, do you really think that you starting a hashtag or a campaign is going to change it? It's not.
No.
They don't care. I'm sure, yes, it will. These things do come across their radar because this is their life right now.
Right.
They are making this film. This poor girl has to also deal with this.
Well, it's like with Kelly Marie Tran
and
the fallout from Last Jedi, where everybody decided she was going to be the punching bag. I hope that Halle Bailey has the support group around her, or you know, maybe she's courageous enough in her own right that she'll be able to weather that storm. One of the things I was thinking about that I'm interested to see how they play it is if they will have like the CGI talking animals.
Right.
Or if it'll just be her talking to the animals, but they don't really
talk
back.
But they look just like normal animals.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. Like, oh, here's just a crab and here's a fish.
I feel like they might have already cast somebody for Sebastian.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I don't know if you want to like Google that really fast. Well, yeah, they might have Sebastian and Scuttle, I think, I feel like they've changed Scuttle. Or it's Flounder. One of the two. I don't know. Because people were in uproar about that crap, too.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a live-action film. It's not going to be exactly the same. I mean, some of them, they tend to follow, you know, the same, I guess, plot for sure. But, like, not everything is going to be exact. It's okay to have difference, guys. I know what we have, like, talks for Ursula is it Melissa McCarthy? McCartney?
Yeah.
McCarthy? I don't know. Either way, that one, I think I was more bummed about that one than hearing that. I'm excited for this Ariel, but I was bummed because I wanted Melissa McCarthy so bad to be Mad Madam Mim that I'm like, well, now she can't be her. But if she is going to be Ursula, cool, whatever.
So
you guys do you.
You didn't get to watch Crazy Rich Asians.
No, I didn't see it.
But you remember like the commercials and trailers for it?
Yeah,
so
kind of.
Awkwafina the Asian actress. She's like the obnoxious best friend in the movie.
I remember the name.
She's playing Scuttle.
Okay.
And then Jacob Tremblay is Flounder.
Is he young?
Yeah, young kid.
I was like, that sounds familiar.
And then Melissa McCarthy, as we said. Yeah, this is Jacob Tremblay. He was in The Smurfs 2.
See, so obviously they have cast them, so they will be talking. I don't know. I've been pleasantly surprised with all of the live action so far. They have not let me down. I don't think there has been one where I've just been bitter about them even remaking it, but I'm not that person. If they're gonna remake it, cool, they're still gonna get my money because I'm interested and I love these films and I want to see a new rendition of it, and if I hate it, then I just won't watch it again.
Yeah,
but that hasn't happened yet. I'm pretty sure all of the live actions, other than things like probably Pete's Dragon and,
well, to be fair, like, I feel like Cinderella I've probably only ever watched like twice, maybe ever.
Yeah, even that
and
one
both
I think
times
I've only seen
sort of
twice.
Tuned in and out.
Yep. I don't even think we own it.
I loved Maleficent, but I don't have much of a
like
drive
when
to
it's
go
on,
back.
And, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's not a I need to put it on and
exactly.
watch it.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think they've done like great with these movies. Lately I feel like they have just been overboard, like where they got Beauty and the Beast and they're like, we got it, we have figured this out, we have them hooked, we keep giving them this, we're good. I mean, it started with Jungle Book though, right?
Yeah,
well, not started with that, but like the success was
of
Jungle Book.
Yeah,
was
yeah.
crazy. That was amazing. So they knew that they had to do well with Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that one had a little bit more. Once you get into these Renaissance films, because the age that, you know, those kids were us.
Yeah.
And now we are grown up. The age we are now, we are their audience that they're targeting. You know, they're
right.
trying to make it appealing to us again. And for the most part, I think there's more of a majority that are for these films than are against them.
Right.
Yes, those negative people, I think, have a bigger voice because it is so negative.
Yeah.
But it's up to us to, you know, be more positive and say, hey, yeah. you know what? Just don't watch it. You don't have to go and see these films. I love that we have listeners who are on the opposite side, not for any reasons of casting, but because they just don't want to see the films made. Then they don't go see them. Awesome. Good. Don't give them your money, because that is why they keep making them, because we give them our money. But there are more people who do want to see these films, and that's why they will continue to make them.
100%.
So I'm pumped for Little Mermaid. I think Halle Bailey is going to be amazing. She's got an awesome voice. I think she's going to look amazing as Ariel. And if you guys want to hear some positivity, she does have a good circle around her. Her whole group for Grown-ish, like the people who work on that, wrote a whole long article about like basically silencing the negative
the
people.
Haters.
Yeah. And then they went back and they went facts and they were like, okay, you guys want to now bring in the fact that, oh, it has to be Danish because of this.
Yeah. Cause
well,
Hans
guess
Christian
what?
Anderson. Yeah.
There can be black Danish people. And guess what? There can be black people with red hair. So your argument is invalid.
Well, and above and beyond that, it's a mermaid. It's a fictional character. And even then, like when you think about, you know, like people talking about, oh, well, it's uncreative, it's unoriginal, Disney's just remaking their own stuff. And it's like, yeah, but even The Little Mermaid in 1989
was original.
Yeah, was Disney's rendition of a Hans Christian Andersen
exactly.
story.
All
which,
of their stories
which
were.
Which is super dark. Super, super dark. If you ever read the actual, like, Little Mermaid, like, first off, like, her tongue gets cut off.
Wonderful.
Second off, like, her legs, like, bleed or burn when she, like, walks. Third off, she gets rejected from the prince and then contemplates committing suicide. And then she turns back into, like, sea foam.
This is the fairy tale that all these negative people need. They deserve it.
Right?
They deserve to see that version of it.
You wanted Little Mermaid? Here's Little Mermaid, you know?
Somebody go make it. But guess what? That's not Disney.
Yeah.
That doesn't scream Disney at all.
Even freaking Lion King is basically a telling of Othello. Or not Othello. Hamlet.
Right.
So you're like, come on, man. Like,
everything stems from something.
Yeah, Aladdin was from a 1,500-year-old story, a 1,000-year-old story. So,
Aladdin, Mulan.
Yeah, like, everything. Everything.
Hunchback.
Yeah. everything comes from something else, and these are just everything Disney's version of it. So if Disney wants to update their version of their retelling, it's that's totally within their right.
The Jungle Book. Like, everything came from a book, a story, somebody else's tale.
No, people are crazy. And it stems back to what, I know we're long in the tooth on this one. But I know, but it stems back to what we were talking about on Spider-Man. Like, that this is just an updated, their version of the story. If you don't like this version, go watch or read or immerse yourself in the versions that you did enjoy.
Exactly.
If you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Wise words from Thumper.
That's right. All right. So moving it into the next little block here. So go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I'm like not prepared with my news right now. So what's next, Liam?
So next is our first look at the, we got a first look at live action Mulan, which that trailer absolutely stunned me.
Which I'm angry about that one because... really? They're going to make a Mulan movie without music? Ugh, just kidding.
How dare they? We also did see new trailers for Maleficent 2 and The Lion King. Neither one of those really gave us anything that we hadn't seen before. There was like a little teaser that showed...
I think Maleficent gave us more of the story, showing Michelle Pfeiffer. I don't know if you got to see it.
Yes. As, and like,
you can tell she will be more of a villain.
Well, she's... Maleficent Maleficent is more of like an anti-hero. Like, she's bad inherently, but the reason she is bad is because she's trying to do what she's trying to do what she thinks is right. She's trying to protect her loved ones. And Michelle Pfeiffer's character is obviously the bad guy. And
obviously gunning for her.
Yeah, she knows how to push the buttons. So I like that they definitely teed up that this is going to be like all out war again between the humans and the fairy folk.
Yep.
So I'm excited for that.
Yeah, to end it with the whole, now you try to protect your, your... your people, but now you need to protect your own. It's like, yes.
And then you saw the other...
oh my God, there's so many more fairies. Let's do this, or whatever they are.
That looks super cool. Lion King, the main new one that I've seen, little TV spot, because obviously that comes out this coming week on the 19th, was Pumbaa and Timon finding Simba passed out in the desert.
They've been showing a lot of, Pumbaa Timon scenes now. I think they're trying to... touch on the funny.
Yes.
Which they do. I feel like Disney always says, they're like, here's the serious trailers.
Yeah.
You get two of them. And now every TV spot from here on out is going to be funny jokes.
Yep. But,
which is Timon and Pumbaa.
Same thing. I've said numerous times in the tenure of the show that Lion King's not one of my favorite Renaissance films, let alone one of my favorite Disney films. It's always the first one to get eliminated pretty much regardless of what it's against in our brackets. But I do recognize that it is a beloved film by many, many
people.
It is. And ultimately, the story itself is a really good story because it's Hamlet. But I'm actually really excited for this. Like, I think not just the announcing of all the voice cast that we've gotten over the last year, but also the way that all of this was animated is very Jungle Book in the way that everybody is rendered. The scenery looks beautiful. The fact that they're integrating the songs as well. Like, hearing in one of the newer trailers the piano, the slow piano and strings of Can You Feel the Love Tonight? Mm-hmm. Absolutely gorgeous.
I think they have shown them singing it. In one of the trailers.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah,
yet,
so you do hear Glover and Beyonce singing.
Nice.
The Can't You Feel the Love Tonight a little bit. But I haven't looked for it because I kind of just want to wait and hear it in the film.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So, look, I want to be in that moment when I'm watching the movie. So hopefully we will be able to make it out this week and get there for that opening night because... Yeah. Hey, I'm excited. Lion King was a big film for me when I was younger. As I have gotten older, it has fallen way to the back, especially in the Renaissance. It's probably towards the back, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, Hunchback's probably the lowest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely not running to see Hunchback. But it was funny because Remy had that little kick of wanting to watch Hunchback for a while. I'm like, that's awesome. Like, it's kind of dark, but it's awesome that you're interested in this film because I don't... When I was a kid, I definitely was. But I think every kid in that time was interested in every new movie that was coming out.
A lot of good songs.
The music and then Esmeralda was amazing for me. I had her Barbie doll and everything. So I was excited for that one. But I really enjoyed that one. Then now, like I said, it's not one I want to rush to see. And Lion King, because of the emotions with Mufasa and that scene... It freaking hurts my heart, and I don't like to watch it. It's the same with Dumbo and Bambi, Fox and the Hound. If it makes me really sad, I don't want to watch it. if it made me really sad when I was a kid, I don't want to watch it.
It still resonates. Yeah, you know, so hits you, affects you the same way.
No, I don't need to see those movies because if I understood that then, oh, that's deep.
Well, that, and as you get older, now you can equate it to like your own life experiences, and I think it hits you at an even more personal level.
But now it's like I love crying. I love having those emotional moments in movies. Right. But because it hit me when I was a child, it's like, oh no, I was way too young to know those feelings. But Disney's teaching us things at young ages, I guess. That's why everybody starts boycotts and hashtags and campaigns against Disney.
They keep us on our toes. So with Mulan, now obviously this is, as we've heard, they're not going to be implementing the same songs that we got from the animated film. Right. We've also heard that they're not utilizing Mushu, that they're instead they're going to utilize
like
a phoenix.
Yeah.
Which, I'll be honest, at first I was a little bummed. I was like, oh, how are you going to do all these other remakes and this one's not going to have it? But then now seeing this trailer and realizing, oh, it's a kung fu movie, not a musical. Like,
I think it's going to be as realistic as it can be.
Yeah, like if you were going to throw in songs and a like an African-American comedian dragon, like that would have stuck out like a sore thumb. Like you definitely don't need to have that. If you want to have her singing something that's very specific to her culture, I'm fine with that. And I think that that was something, I've read that Disney has spoken out about the fact that the original Mulan back in, what was it, 1998, was polarizing to a lot of
Asian ethnicity or
like in China, right?
Oh, okay.
Because the portrayal of the Huns, because of the portrayal like the emperor bowing to her at like the end of the movie, spoiler alert, you know, things like that where it was like that was very against their culture, and they felt that it was Disney westernizing too much of it and not paying proper respect, and that now seeing this trailer and Disney has come out and said like, no, we heard the feedback previously and we wanted to make sure that we made things right.
Let's fix our mistakes
this time around,
you know.
And let's be honest, Disney's a business and they understand that a large market is the Chinese market. Like you have to make sure that your movies are going to do well. Honestly, it's why Star Wars has never done the giant box office numbers that it probably could.
In China.
It's because China typically doesn't like Star Wars.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it doesn't hit for them.
And that's fine. It's, you know, it's not going to hit with everybody.
Yeah.
With every group of people. But if we're adapting other people's cultures, we should do it well and do it right.
Yep, 100%. So I absolutely loved the trailer that we got. I am super excited for this movie. It'll be interesting to see how everybody else reacts, especially as we get more trailers.
I've seen a lot of positivity for this, though. I think there was, at first, a lot of negative comments about the fact that we heard that there's not going to be a musical, Mushu was being changed, all of the, you know, big changes that were happening to Mulan, everybody just jumped
on board. It wasn't
going to
be like
board.
The Li Shang character or whatever.
Oh,
Shang
there you
Li.
Go. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Her love interest or whatever.
Is it Li Shang?
Li
Shang, yeah.
I think it's Li Shang.
Not no. Shang Li? Yeah, Li Shang.
Sure, why not?
Thanks.
Anywho, so many people were just negative already, you know, from the get-go about all the little rumors that they were hearing. And it's what we do. It's what the internet does. They have to put in their 2 cents right away until they finally get that trailer. And that's one thing I think we try to do our best about is, of course, yeah, we have an opinion, but we try to stay positive until we see something from it. And even when we do, it's like, it's a trailer. It's not the movie. Disney and everything under Disney has done so well with trailers, I think, where they give you, you feel like you're getting too much when you're watching the trailers, but then you watch the film and you're like, wow, that was way more than I ever thought, you know, didn't think they would ever go in this direction. I think that's what they do with, you know, especially the live action trailers. I mean, we already know what to expect from Mulan, the animated film. This looks completely different.
Yeah.
When you watch the Lion King trailer, no, that looks like spot for spot.
Yeah,
the Lion
Aladdin,
King movie,
same
Aladdin,
thing.
Same thing. Beauty and the Beast, same thing. This looks so different. I love that I'm seeing more positive things that I think I'm interested now. Like, I want to go watch this movie because this doesn't look like just a rehashing of the Mulan movie. And I think that's what people want.
Yeah. I think honestly that the feedback kind of shows that that's probably what people wanted with Beauty and the Beast, with Aladdin, mm-hmm. with what ultimately we'll get with Little Mermaid. And that's fine, but I don't want that for every movie. Like, mm-hmm. for some of these ones, yeah, change enough that it feels a little bit different. Mm-hmm. Like, not every beat feels exactly the same as the animated film, but I want there to just be enough familiarity that mm-hmm. that it's still, you still feel like you're watching something.
You know it's an adaptation of the animated yes. Disney film.
The nostalgia, there's enough of it
the
there.
The point.
Right?
It's so. Not just them wanting to tell another Mulan story, you know, not another Aladdin story. Like, that's not what they're doing. They want to retell their animated versions of these movies. They're just, like I said, Disney's fixing their mistakes. And yeah. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised with Mulan. This might be probably the one that hits, like everybody the most
right.
out of this whole Renaissance film. Yeah,
let's hope. Let's hope so. Perfect. So last bit of Disney news is actually the Galaxy's Edge, Rise of the Resistance. The opening dates have been pushed back. So this is kind of interesting because we already knew that initially we weren't going to get them in fall as we expected.
Right.
Obviously with Disney World's opening, they already knew that they were getting it late summer, early fall anyways. And now it looks like Rise of the Resistance for them is going to be December 5th. So it's actually going to be on Walt Disney's birthday, yeah. which is really cool. But for us out here in Disneyland, it's actually not opening until January 17th.
I mean, that's kind of the surprise is why is Disneyland's pushed so far back when ours has been open so much longer.
That would be exactly the reason why. So because theirs is still under construction and they don't have people going in yeah. and out, they can stay more focused on the construction that they're trying to do.
Right.
And you and I talked about this, I think, last week when we first heard about it. It's probably kind of a, hey, sorry you guys didn't get your park open the same time the West Coast did.
Right.
You know, so like since we got our first crack at Smuggler's Run and ultimately the park itself, like that section of the park, now they're going to get their opening and they're going to get Rise of Resistance just a couple months after that. Whereas for us, we'll be waiting till January. What's going to be interesting, though, is I know a lot of people have said, well, I'll just wait till both rides are available.
Yeah.
And then I'll go to Star Wars Land. I wonder if now this will make people go, well, I'm not going to wait all the way till January to go. I'll just go now, in which case we'll see a higher influx of attendance. Or if you'll see it continue to push until people can go, like, especially the people that are like, this is my one Disney trip. I'm not going until both of them are open.
Right. You know? That makes sense. I feel like that is the smart thing to do. If you are those people that don't go as often, you know, as pass holders, or maybe you do only go once every couple of years, I would wait until both of those rides are open. The land is amazing for sure, but you don't, which is probably good that you don't need a whole day for Star Wars Land.
Yeah, of course not.
You really only need a few hours. So the fact that both rides aren't open, I don't know. It kind of takes from the experience a little bit. And for me, you know, being pregnant when we went, still being pregnant, but being pregnant at the time of going and not being able to go on the ride, I think that definitely hindered my experience a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't get to experience the Millennium Falcon. So I just got to go in and look at things and it beautiful for sure. It was amazing. I felt like I was in a Star Wars, you know, galaxy far, far away on some crazy planet for sure. I didn't feel like I was in Disneyland at all. I mean, I did. Because Disney has that magic of making you feel that way. So you know it's a Disney park. But they did a great job of making you feel like you were in a Star Wars land. But I think the rides further that story.
100%.
And the magic a little bit more. And hey, I'm sure there's people who don't even like rides. So I don't know how you guys enjoy parks at all. But I don't know. I think I would love it even more when I finally get to experience both of those rides. And so the fact that, hey, it's not opening until January, cool. Then I'll get to go experience both of the rides around the same time. So it'll be a new thing for me. The only thing is I think it's kind of a bummer that they've pushed it back so far out, you know, for Disneyland being what, January 17th, you said?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, next year after the holidays, I wonder if that was also just planning because of the holidays. I really think that Disneyland is enjoying the lighter crowds. I think this is what they wanted to begin with.
Yeah.
This is why they have blocked out APs. This is why they have pretty much priced out people. The fact that to go during the summer on a peak day is almost $200 for a park hopper. Yeah, it's a little less if you don't get a park hopper, but come on now.
But still, yeah, you're gonna.
And this is exactly what they wanted to do. I don't think it's about them losing money. I don't think it's about them. People are not interested in Disney anymore. That's not happening. This is what they wanted to do. So they had positive reactions to this land, to all the new things that are coming. Because when the crowds are overbearing, that's when you look up articles, that's all people talk about.
Yeah.
It's busy. It's overcrowded. We waited this long in this line. Parking was, you know, chaotic. There was no parking. I mean, now there better be because there are like 6,000 spots that are open in Pixar Pals.
Yeah, the
Pixar Pals.
Pixar Pal parking structure.
Yeah. So I imagine they have more than enough space, but I don't know. Like, Disney wants the positivity. They want to stay on that up and up. And I think this is just part of that measure. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, and hey, if you're going to be complaining about it not being busy, you are a weirdo.
Right.
Then I'm ready for it to go back to like 2010, freaking 2010 to 2012.
That would be amazing.
Like crowds. Oh, so beautiful.
So we'll keep you guys updated if anything changes on that. But for right now, in Walt Disney World, December 5th, and in Disneyland, January 17th.
We'll be there.
Perfect. So moving into the Marvel news. So Endgame's re-release is, as of right now, as of us recording the show, they are $8 million shy of hitting, of eclipsing Avatar. So this would actually make them, if they do, obviously the highest grossing film of all time. And what's really interesting, too, is they would have been able to do it in less time than what Avatar did.
Wow.
So that would be really, really cool. The thing that I think can be the biggest hiccup, though, is that they've already announced that it will be available for digital download on July 30th.
Oh, it's right around the corner.
Exactly. And that the Ultra HD Blu-ray, regular Blu-ray and DVD will be August 13th. So we really are about a month away from it being available. Now, That's not to say that just because people buy it, that doesn't mean that they won't also still go to the theaters. I would imagine it'll probably stay in theaters till like around beginning of September.
Even, really? Long?
Well, you got to figure the $5 theaters, a lot of the ones that like they just need another movie to kind of plug it up until
I always forget about those, that they're just like movies that were out of theaters 3 months ago.
Exactly. Well, how many times have we seen here like stuff that you could buy, but for some reason it's still in the theater?
You're so, like, that's in Redbox. I don't understand.
So those things do happen. I would say more than likely it's gonna eclipse it. I think it will do it with a whimper more than like a roar, which is kind of a bummer because I really wanted it to just be like this big, massive overtaking. Yeah. I thought it was going to clear $3 billion. Because I thought it was going to be the first movie to clear $3 billion.
They're just going to keep battling each other. Avatar is going to re-release again.
It probably will, but I think I said on a previous episode that I imagine Marvel eventually was going to do a re-release would be Infinity War and Endgame back to back,
right?
So that you could buy it and it would be 6 hours, and you'd get an intermission, but basically you're sitting in a theater for
goodness,
you know, a full evening there.
Like, that sounds fun, but I think once you start owning things, it's a lot harder, for me at least. This is definitely a me opinion.
To go back out.
To go back. If I own it, it's the same thing when the Studio Ghibli movies keep coming around.
Yeah.
I so desperately want to go, and then when I really think about it, I'm like, oh, okay. Or I could save my money and go see a new movie. And I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Because I already own this one and can just watch it on TV, which is such a... You know, I never got to see them in theaters anyway, so I should just go
because
do
it's
it.
It's an opportunity.
But
yeah, yeah.
I still, at the end of the day, I'm like, nope, I can just watch it at home. That's just how I'm very frugal, though, so I don't know. I just would rather not spend the money. Even right now, I want to go see Endgame again in theaters just to be able to
contribute, yeah.
But then I think about it, Lion King's around the corner. We need a Disney trip around the corner. No. Like, oh, money, it does not grow on trees, guys.
No, we have learned this. Nice. So the next bit of news is actually bringing it right back around to Spider-Man. So Far From Home is actually on track to eclipse $1 billion, which would be the first Spider-Man film to do so.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I think, you know, a lot of people, as we said before, with these Sam Raimi films, they're very beloved.
See, I'd rather go see Spider-Man again to put that one up there.
Yeah, to help kind of drive them. Like, Endgame's made its money. If it doesn't beat Avatar, like, I mean, it is what
it'll
it is.
Do it eventually.
But I would love to see Far From Home clear $1 billion, especially because I feel like it was very unexpected to do so. I think following Endgame, but you also think about it, then that way you've had Captain Marvel, which did like $1.3 billion, Endgame, which right now has done $2.7 billion, and now Far From Home on track to clear $1 billion as well. So I think they have built in that crowd. And then it makes you feel really bad for like Ant-Man and the Wasp because they didn't come close to hitting $1 billion. Well, not too bad, but... It's you could kind of tell like what franchises are the ones.
You see what people's favorites are and what people are familiar with. You know, Ant-Man was one of those characters that was never familiar. And even though it was successful, yes, still successful. Because you got to look at the numbers where like that's still a lot of money what they make. It's just not the other movies, you know, type of money. In comparison to the other MCU films, there are much bigger films. But the other money that like Doctor Strange and Ant-Man makes is still a lot of money.
Right. Yeah, no, right now Far From Home is at $847 million worldwide. And you've got to
Yeah, holy moly,
$847 million, and you got to figure it opened July 4th week, so it's been open for about 10 days, 2 weeks maybe at the most. So yeah,
that's
it's really impressive, and this is one of those movies that somebody at my work had mentioned was worth going to see in 4DX, and we actually have a 4DX theater here in Fresno now. So
that's what we said too. We're like, I think this is the movie that we should probably see in 4DX.
So hopefully. Hopefully we'll suck it up and actually go because it would be really cool to see, to experience and to help kind of push that money up just a little bit more.
Right. Those freaking ticket prices are crazy.
Out of this world. You've been to space tickets.
Are they like $24?
Yeah, I think so. It's about 24. It's about double what you'll pay for a regular movie ticket.
Goodness. I mean, well, but they do give you free water. They give you free air. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. That's part of the experience. Okay. They give you a free back massage.
You get a shower.
Right? Last bit of news in the Marvel Universe is yet again tied to the MCU, but Marvel's actually expected to reveal what we're going to expect to see for Phase 4, whatever they're going to call Phase 4, coming up at San Diego Comic-Con, which if I remember correctly is supposed to be like the 18th to the 21st. So not this coming weekend. No, this coming weekend. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so not the weekend we are currently in, but this next weekend. So we're only a handful of days away from getting to see that release. Obviously, Marvel will overtake Hall H. We've heard rumors that there will probably be an Endgame reunion, that they're going to have a lot of the principal cast coming out to reminisce, and they'll talk about a bunch of the different like just experiences and, you know, other things that had happened during, I'm guessing, like the entirety of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then also what we're going to eventually see with probably what's coming up next and like some of the characters that are returning. And, you know, I don't know if any of the ones really that are out of contract will pop in for that one, but it'll be interesting to see, especially because with the Avengers Endgame DVD, not only that they're going to have like the behind the scenes featurettes and the typical commentary and deleted scenes and blooper reel, but there's going to be a bonus feature called Steve and Peggy One Last Dance, which takes a look at Steve Rogers and Peggy Carter's relationship across the whole MCU. So I think that's going to be kind of cool. I would love to see Chris Evans and Haley Atwell both make an appearance
stage.
If not, I mean, missed opportunity, but if they do, I mean, they're pretty much everyone's favorite MCU couple. I mean, until MJ and Peter, of course. I don't know. Who's your favorite couple in the MCU?
I feel like we always talk about this and I never have an answer.
I mean, there's only one right answer, but I want to see which one you go with.
Only one right answer. Let's see. Wanda and Vision?
No. It's obviously Korg and Meek. That's the greatest relationship.
Gosh. He stepped on him. Does he even really care?
Look, he's still alive.
He got lucky. He almost just straight up killed his best pal.
Pretty much. But it's Korg, so you forgive him.
Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, no, I'm excited for that. I'm excited to hear. We've talked about in the previous episode 3 weeks ago that the expectations are, Black Panther 2, Doctor Strange 2, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Black Widow, Shang-Chi, and Eternals. Those are the six that we would imagine would at least accompany the next 2 years of the cycle. And then I would imagine after that, you're probably looking at like Spider-Man 3. You've got to look at another Ant-Man movie, some sort of massive team up, whether it's going to be Avengers, Young Avengers, Dark Avengers, which is interesting because somebody went on and found like deactivated Facebook accounts that were like Young Avengers official, Marvel's Dark Avengers. Like, and it, you don't know if it was actually Marvel that set it up, but interesting that those would be like deactivated Facebook accounts. So we'll see if that actually lends itself to anything true. So
I feel like people like make things up, or like they make them.
They're like, I heard this rumor. I'm gonna make it first, so they have to buy it from me. Yeah, that or Marvel does it just to be like, feed the rumor mill. Let's see what rumors people.
We don't ever know these days, man. Yep. You gotta work for the big guys to know the inside info, and then if you do, we can't tell you guys.
Yeah, exactly. That's that whole ITK, Perfect. So moving into some Star Wars news.
My goodness, what are we talking about with Star Wars?
Well, with Star Wars, obviously we got to talk about Diego Luna hating Rogue One, hating the ending of Rogue One. He was just...
I just don't believe it.
Said he was disappointed with the ending of Rogue One.
Was he just sad that he died?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, honestly, he talked about it obviously as he's doing... I might say obviously twice. But he talked about with... the Cassian Andor series coming to Disney Plus, and he talked about his excitement of being able to work with Alan Tudyk again and just the chemistry that they had in doing the first film. But he said he was disappointed not because he didn't think it fit. He said that obviously that ending made a lot of sense because, you know, with those characters and their mission, that ultimately was going to have to be the outcome. You know, yeah, right. It would have been cool if maybe one or two of them had survived, but... to see it end in that way, it kind of makes you feel, well, yeah, it was a suicide mission from the get-go. So I the way that he sort of phrased it was, you know, he was talking to his daughter or whatnot. And like, they were sad to see the characters go, but he understood the reasoning why.
Right.
And having this solo series now, because obviously he felt there was more story that could have been told.
Oh,
and
totally.
He could have done more with these characters. But now he gets to do that. Just as in a prequel sense,
exactly.
Whereas him and with K2SO.
So he won't get to interact with the other characters, but
right.
At least he gets to K2SO.
Yeah, and we get to see more of his espionage things. I would love to see if eventually you see a crossover between him and some of the characters that we'll meet in Mandalorian, because
obviously,
and we'll talk about Mandalorian in a little bit, but that's taking place after Return of the Jedi. So, you know, not the same time frame. We're talking pre-A New Hope versus post-Return of the Jedi. But still, you've got characters that survive through those films. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where they go with that. I'm super excited for it because I love Rogue One's my favorite film out of the new Disney era of Star Wars.
Right.
And I love Cassian Andor as a character.
You need to watch it again.
K2SO just owned it. I loved it.
Oh, heck yeah. Well, that's what we were talking about earlier about Alan Tudyk. Just now that's K2SO.
Yeah.
So now when we hear him in other things, that's all we hear.
Well, because you were saying he would have been a good Zazu instead of John Oliver.
Yeah.
But I brought up that, yeah, but then he'll probably end up sounding like K2SO.
And you can't overkill. I think that's one thing that Disney finds somebody that they really like and then they give them every role.
Yeah.
Which obviously they've done with Alan Tudyk and Idris Elba. They
Denny
have done
Slate.
These things. I just feel like... he is just so awesome at what he does that anytime you hear a character is coming up, you're like, well, yeah, Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
Obviously, it should be him. But I like that they're trying to branch out and give other people some opportunities here. Maybe John Oliver will be the next Alan Tudyk. Who knows?
Right. No, I
highly doubt it.
I love that, like, in Star versus the Forces of Evil, that Alan Tudyk not just
he's
voices...
He's like a billion voices.
Yeah, he doesn't just voice the dad, but he also voices the bad guy, the freaking the little midget crow.
Ludo. Person.
Ludo, yeah. So I love that he's two main characters and then also random voices.
Yeah, he does a lot of random voices.
And then you also get Patrick Stump from Fallout Boy is the minstrel.
Which is super, super random, genius. But that one you know is him.
Yeah, you can. Well, as soon as he starts singing, you're like, oh,
what?
There you go.
Yeah, that's such a good show. way off topic.
Yeah, way off topic.
I thought with Diego Luna, I thought you were going to say that he was starting a hashtag or something. That's how disappointed he was with Rogue One.
No, that would have been super funny, though, if he did.
Diego Luna starts his own campaign against Star Wars.
Against his own TV show. Perfect. So a little bit more in the Star Wars realm. So Daisy Ridley actually talked about how there is a potential for more intense lightsaber battles for Episode 9, which if we really think about the throne room sequence that we got in Episode 8, that definitely makes me incredibly excited for 9, just to see what else they decide to do. And what a lot of what she talked about was that they've lightened the lightsabers. So before they were much heavier, clunkier material, and now that they've started using lighter,
like on set.
On set.
Okay, so like, I was like, wait,
so
what?
So for them to be able to maneuver and utilize the lightsabers, it's easier for them because they don't have the same weight.
Daisy, they actually haven't. You've just gotten stronger over the years.
So much stronger. She's a Mary Sue. She has all the powers. So what's really
get over it?
What I think will be interesting about this is with her saying that I will be excited to see her crafting another lightsaber, whether she
does like a twirly flip.
I'm telling you, it's a dream sequence. That's a dream sequence. She still ignites a blue lightsaber.
I don't care if it was a dream sequence or not.
Lightsaber. So unless she
reconstructs the stunt woman had to do that.
I know. I'm not saying it's not cool. I'm just saying that I'm not looking that far into that scene because I imagine it's going to be like some sort of weird dream sequence. I'm not saying it's not cool. I'm just saying it's probably a dream sequence.
I just really hope it's not, just because.
It's just, why wouldn't he fire at her if he's flying? I know. Like, I'm going to run her over. What? Are you stupid?
And even if she was that amazing, I think he'd still hit her.
Best case scenario.
He'd still clip her.
No, but I'm saying best case scenario, you fly directly at her. She stands still, ignites the lightsaber, and cuts the cockpit in half.
Yeah.
Including the pilot. Like, come on.
Yeah,
there's a limit
here. Really cool too.
But anyways, now I'm excited. One of my favorite aspects of the prequels was the lightsaber battles. I mean, just everything from the Qui-Gon Obi-Wan Darth Maul to the Obi-Wan Anakin and Dooku, Yoda and Dooku, and then obviously the volcano Obi-Wan versus Anakin.
Like, this is what everybody wants to see, right? Like, lightsaber duels. Like, that, right?
Yeah.
This is what we enjoy, other than, like, space fighting scenes and all that good stuff.
Well, and as much as I liked the ending in Force Awakens, I did feel like it was kind of more of a throwback to the clunkier lightsaber battles that we saw in the original trilogy. And I understood not wanting to go full Ninja Force 5 in all aspects of it, but I want to still see that sometimes. I'm not saying every fight needs to be that crazy.
But I think we've worked our way there. Like, we're on the third movie. We have
grown. They've practiced.
Yeah, exactly. I imagine at this point, Rey has gotten some more practice. It would be nuts if it was, I mean, it's the arguments where Finn, you know,
he can fight with a lightsaber.
Yeah, because that was never stated that he couldn't.
Right.
That other people can't
just
use
he's a
lightsaber.
Custodian, you don't think he stood there with his broom and swung it around pretending the lightsaber
goodness,
battle?
Goodness, people. Like, they have arm strength. They can do these things.
Right.
Doesn't mean they're going to be amazing, but they can do it. So I feel like with Rey, by this point, she's got some anger. Of course, yes, I get it. The light side, she shouldn't have anger, but it's there. She's learned. She's grown. She's practiced. I want to see her do some crazy more battles in this one. If we got the throne room scene, it's got to be more epic than that.
And I'm interested to see what the time jump is. You know, because after from 7 to 8 was like the next day, later that same day. But now this time, like having a time jump, it'll be interesting to see if it's like a year, 2 years, or if it's like a 5 year gap. So we'll see.
Well, didn't like. Freaking what Finn, what is Finn's name?
John Boyega.
Yeah, so I was like, why is that I want to call him Josh. And I'm like, his name's not Josh. Didn't he like let something slip a while back? Like it was what was the time?
2 years, I think.
He straight up said that and then they tried to ask him about it again recently and what? He's like, no. I never said that. I don't know. Change the subject.
Doofus says what?
Usually when they do that is because they did let something slip.
Yep.
I imagine there's going to be a mini gap in there somewhere.
I would hope so.
Probably not a huge one, but a little mini gap.
No.
Enough for them to find other resources and, you know, people who want to join the resistance again.
More soldiers, more cannon fodder.
Because at the end of The Last Jedi, weren't getting
the entire
help.
Resistance fits in the Millennium Falcon. We're not really talking about a large army right now.
And nobody was coming to their aid.
Yeah, exactly.
So what has happened since then?
Right.
But I'm pumped to see how they establish Carrie Fisher in this one. Because just the whole, utilizing old footage. I like that. I like that they were able to do that. And there was one thing where I think Daisy also talked about the scene that we see in the trailer where her and Leia are hugging.
Yeah.
And it looks like a very emotional scene. She had said what Carrie was saying to her. I don't know if you had read that article or something. Of course, Carrie being, the humorous person that she was. And she said something like, "This is a really long hug." Just being really just awkward with it. And of course, they're supposed to be emotional in this scene because at least that's what it looks like in the trailer.
Yeah.
I don't know what the heck's happening then. But Daisy did say it was a very serious scene, it was a very emotional scene. And then I had Carrie in my ear making jokes.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that's so awesome.
Feels fitting. Well, it's like that thing we found on Twitter that somebody had posted. It was archived footage of them talking in Return of the Jedi.
Good.
And they're trying to come up with their lines and what they're going to say. And then both Mark and Harrison are like, oh, we'll say this. And then Carrie's like, can I say that too? And they're no. Both of them at the same time.
Those brats.
Yep.
Not fair.
Well, and I saw another picture. If you guys don't follow Mark Hamill, follow him. He has all of the best tweets and posts and whatnot. But he had somebody had posted something and he retweeted it, but it was him and Carrie in Tunisia for Return of the Jedi. So she's in the slave bikini, the metal bikini, and he's in his outfit, but he's wearing one of her robes over it. And he talks about how she was constantly trying to get him to put on clothes to make him look ridiculous. And she got him to wear that by saying oh, there's nobody around. And then at that exact moment, she's pointing to a photographer with a long lens.
Oh.
That's getting them on picture. And you just tell Mark's what? It's awesome.
She got him.
Yep. So just seeing that, it kind of makes you wish that, honestly, that we had gotten all three of them in all three of these films able to have more of that chemistry between the three. But then you think about, obviously, with her passing, how much more heart-wrenching would that have been?
Oh, God, yeah.
If they'd had more of that time together.
I think that is really my only complaint with the new films is the fact that there wasn't more of them together.
Well, there was never one scene.
Yeah, with them together. Yeah.
We get one scene with Mark and Carrie, but even we got the one scene with Harrison and Carrie.
Yeah.
Or two, if you will. And then you get one with Mark and Carrie, and then you find out that with that sequence, he's a freaking Force ghost anyways, or a projection anyways. So you're he's not even really there.
I mean, still emotional though. I mean, there is still a connection there.
Emotional for me because I'm frustrated. Come on.
They felt it. She felt it. Yeah, even though he wasn't there, she knew. Bow, bow, bow. I don't know. But I think that is the only complaint is with this, it being the ending of the Skywalker saga and them being obviously the staples from the get-go. Why? Why couldn't that have been there in Force Awakens somewhere? Why couldn't that have been the start off to get to that point somewhere in that film?
Right.
Even if they weren't going to be friends forever and hang out, the rest of the film, but to have a moment together and then go their separate ways from there, But
I always
too late now.
I still think to the scene where Han is walking towards Kylo on the bridge. And I always, in my back of my mind, I'm just like, I would have had Luke pop in right here.
Yeah.
Right here on the other end of the bridge, diverting his attention. And then Han can die at that sequence, but he should die.
But at least he was there.
But he should die stopping Luke from killing Kylo. He catches Luke's hand and makes him stop, and then Kylo stabs Han through the back. Something like that I think would have been kind of dope.
Ooh,
and
epic.
Then Luke would have almost had even more of the animosity, Kylo stabs Han and then takes off. And Luke is just so stunned with his best friend dying in his arms. To me, as emotional as it was seeing Han touch his face and fall off the scaffolding, I think for me, that would have been a much heavier moment. But who knows?
Well, yeah. And because we were going from, being so invested in the originals, to then having to find a connection with, yes, we get it that he's his son,
yeah,
that they would have an emotional connection. Like, we should feel for them. But it's kind of like, but he just killed him and we loved Han. Yeah, we don't love you, Kylo.
Right.
We love Han.
You ain't there yet, kid.
Yes. So I think that's also kind of like a bummer. No. We didn't have that emotional connection.
No, not at all.
But hopefully by this third movie, it will all come together. And it will be amazing. Luke will be a Force ghost, obviously.
And honestly, even if
Han will be a Force ghost, because right? that is how the Force works.
That's not how the Force works.
I don't know what they're going to do with Leia. I just know every time I'm going to see her on the screen, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, but you cry all the time anyways.
And this is true. She could still be here and I would probably cry when I see her on the screen.
It's kind of what you do.
Yes.
It's kind of what you're good for.
But I don't know. I'm looking forward to it.
You know what, though? But even if we don't like Episode 9, we still have The Mandalorian right around the corner here on Disney+.
Oh, there's
Plus.
Still Star Wars news to I talk know. About? Goodness.
Well, that's why I was like, are you going to keep dragging out about Carrie, or can we finish the freaking news and get off this episode?
Carrie's the only important topic.
Obviously. But no, Jon Favreau actually made an appearance on Jimmy Kimmel, and you know, obviously they asked him a bunch of questions about, you know, like with Marvel and with everything else going on, and then always with Star Wars. So he talked about with Mandalorian and how he had written multiple episodes before even going in to do the pitch because he was so excited about it. And that even before they finished filming, he's already started writing season 2. So, I mean, obviously this is going to be something that they're going to build on. And as I said before, the timeline is that it's right after Return of the Jedi. Jon Favreau talks about how the Empire has fallen and scattered. And so there's kind of a rise in the underworld in the galaxy, because now they're like, okay, well, the rebels aren't really established as a government yet. The Empire's not here to lord over us. So you have bounty hunters and criminals and
running whatnot. The show.
Yeah. So there, especially in those outer rim territories where there wasn't really a lot of policing to begin with. And now there's even less. So obviously the buildup on that, you know, they haven't really done in depth with the storyline, other than, you know, Mandalorian is kind of like a lone gunman and just, you know, going from mission to mission, and just as they interact with the other people. I'm really excited for this. To be honest, I think this is the show should have gotten years ago when George Lucas was originally talking about trying to have a live action Star Wars show occur.
Right.
But it almost makes me. It makes me feel more comfortable that we've waited this long to get a showrunner like Jon Favreau, and to have directors like Dave Filoni and Taika Waititi and these, you know, just phenomenal talents coming on board to be able to bring this show to
all of the resources
to Disney
Plus.
So this for me, regardless of what else gets launched on this would be worth it to get Disney Plus.
Right, and this one doesn't start though with the release of Disney Plus, does it?
This one might be a 2020. So I feel like this might be this one was one of the first ones to launch at the beginning of next year. But I don't think Mandalorian launches at the start.
Yeah. But guys, you should lock it in when it comes out, because you know that price is going to go up. I don't know if it's like they have to wait a year before it can go up, or if they can do whatever the heck they want.
So I was totally wrong. It will actually be one of the premiere shows. So November 12th, 2019, and there will be 8 episodes in the first season. So similar to what we've seen in Netflix.
So that's why he's already working on the second season.
Yeah, like with Stranger Things. So, it says The Mandalorian takes place after the fall of the Empire and before the emergence of the First Order, and follows a lone gunfighter in the outer reaches of the galaxy, far from the authority of the New Republic.
Awesome. We will look forward to that in November.
Yeah, I'm so freaking excited for that. But cool. So we were originally going to give you guys kind of a rundown of everything else that was announced to be coming on a Disney Plus, but there was way too much. So we'll probably
and it's a lot of stuff that we kind of already knew. It's just been official.
Exactly. So we might repost some things just for you guys, or to put some stuff up. But for the most part, just know there's a lot of stuff on the horizon, and it's going to be awesome.
Epic.
Perfect. So I think we're probably going to not do shout outs on this episode just because it's been an hour and 30 minutes. But we will thank you guys for tuning in and for being patient. We really didn't get a whole lot of people that were like, what the heck, guys? Like, what's wrong with you? Where's the episode? So we love that you guys have been patient. Hopefully this episode has been worth the wait. And hopefully you guys have seen Spider-Man Far From Home, because we want to know your take on it. What are your thoughts? How does it stack up against Andrew Garfield, against Tobey Maguire, and then also Into the Spider-Verse? Or, heck, even the Drake Bell animated oh, yeah, one the shows. From a couple years ago.
So. Hey, some people prefer that over everything.
Yeah, or the 90s animated one. Let's, I mean, go figure. Yeah. Or the one from way far back. So,
goodness.
Right? Yeah, that's all I got. So, Bima, where can they find you on the internet?
I'm occasionally at Citizen of Disney.
Mostly just Instagram. You really don't do anything with Twitter.
And even then, Instagram has kind of just been boring me.
Yeah.
So.
Not as active.
No. I don't know. When you grow a human, a lot changes.
Yeah. Priorities shift. Priorities
shift. Yeah. I got to worry about the mini human I already have out here.
Yeah.
And then I got to worry about the even minier human inside me. So.
He passed out like 30 minutes ago. He was laying on my lap and then he crawled into his bed and he's out. Like,
yeah.
A light.
Yeah. Trying to enjoy this summer and, I don't know, enjoy these last few months of just being the three of us.
That's true. That's true. The dynamic changes forever.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Well, if you guys want to follow me, I'm at Liam Bright. I'm a little more active on Twitter than I am on Instagram, but a lot of it is soccer stuff, so I apologize in advance. But if you guys want to, definitely check us out both on those, or you can follow the show at Hilt Radio, H-Y-L-T Radio, on Twitter and Instagram. But that's all we had. Thanks again, guys. As always, you know, be safe, be courteous, be kind to each other. And we will catch you on the next episode. But until then, try to make the world a better place.
Need even more Disney, Marvel, and Star Wars in your life? Be sure to visit our website at HiltRadio.com for more magic like our blogs, videos, merch, and access to our archive of episodes. That's HYLTRadio.com. See you real soon.